Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to the European edition of the Carpcast, episode 70, what did we say it was, Mark, 75, 76?
76, I've just broke my abacus, all my shoes and socks are off, but yes, we've made it, 76.
Well, what have you been up to?
I've been catching carp, mate. I've actually caught some carp for a change, in between all the mandatory bream.
Tell us what's been happening.
To be honest, nothing too exciting. I'm having a bit of a not had a massive amount of time this month, so I've just been dropping down to my favourite big pit down at Icombe, and my favourite swim, and 90 yards out from my favourite swim is my favourite weed bed, and my favourite carp swim around it. To be fair, it's easy fishing. It's 20 something wraps, not going to say exactly for the lads who fish there, you can find the exact distance yourself, but when you're in a lake where the sailing club have dyed the lake blue to knock the weed back, and then a great big weed bed grows on a plateau, it's just a fish magnet and they're always there. It's generally on the back of the wind of the part of the lake that it's in, and the fish are still there. So you cast out to it, all four rods are clipped up at the same distance, you spot it up, you put the kettle on. So, I've had wait. Some... yeah, you wait, and I've had a few nice fish out of it, to mid-20s, nothing massive. Although, the last time I was there, I got myself a carp, and then the bream moved in. I know a lot of people like to take the piss. I catch a lot of bream. That's just because I fish a lake with a ton of them in. That is the only reason. But a show moved in en masse. I had the carp about midnight. It was a low 20, something like that. Then between 2 and 3, I had a bream on every rod. And I knew what was that. I just didn't put them back out till about 5:30 when I woke up. I had another 2 bream in half an hour.
I fished a few lakes like that where... when the bream move in like that, and it's just a case of, no point putting them back out. Let them eat the bait and move on.
Yeah, only they hadn't moved on. But I'll tell you what I have done. When I get back down to Monk's Pit, I've spooled up with braid. It's what a lot of lads down there use to combat the kelp weed on there. Kind of like, going backwards and forwards, it does saw through the stems on the kelp quite well. So I've been told anyway. I've yet to experience it myself. But that carp... it was the first fish I've played on braid for, well over 10 years. That'll take some getting used to. I'm not sure I like it.
It does. You can feel everything, can't you? The knocks and the, it's a funny experience. But I remember I used braid only for a few years. And you do get used to it. I prefer it because you're more in control, it feels. But what braid are you using? What have you spooled up with?
I've got the spider wire fluoro braid. Ed Betteridge recommended it to me because he's fished at Monk's, done exactly the same stuff. I've got it on in 30 pounds, and it's kind of like real tight weave, like almost like a coated sort of thing, but not quite. It's for a 30-pound braid. I can't remember the exact diameter, but it's thicker than average. Still a lot thinner than mono.
Yeah,
and it's nice deep green colour, sinks well, it casts well, and winds them in well. But like I say, with that fish, when you get a screaming take at 90 odd yards, you pick the rod up and it's almost wrenched out your hand instantly because you're not quite expecting it. It's interesting.
When I used braid, I think it was like in the Fendrayton days, and and a year or two either side of that, because I got used to it. But I was using those Fox MMXR buzzers at the time. You had a set, didn't you? Same.
I've got 8 of them still.
Have you?
Little things.
Yeah, I had a load.
They still work.
Well, what I found is with the screaming takes on the braid, it was the braid was cutting into the plastic bit, you know, where the rod sits in the middle of the alarm. And every single one of mine, have a look on yours next time you get a screamer on it. I don't know what alarms you're using now, but...
I've got the JRC radars at the minute, which, I'll be honest, they're a lot better than what I expected them to be. They're doing good.
Yeah.
Ridiculous range on the receiver as well. You can... I'll best not say, but yeah, they've got a good range.
It means they can work short distances through lots of undergrowth. That's what it means.
Yes, you can bivvy up behind a tree.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. You saved me there. Thanks for that one.
I was on lake in Austria, which I'll talk about more in a bit, but the lads next to me got friendly with two Austrian lads. And they were using Delkims, and the swims were not far away. I mean, it's like an 8-10 acre lake, and there's 5 swims up each side, so they're not very farly spaced. Farly spaced, is that a word? I was out.
It is now.
I was out partying last night, so yeah, probably going to be a few brain freezes. But these lads. I remember when I got rid of Delkins, put it that way. It was not working in the next swim. And it wasn't heavy undergrowth between the two. There was bushes and trees and stuff, but not loads. And then, the very next swim, just not working.
Yeah, what's the range like on the, is it R3s, RS3s, whatever the Nashi ones are now that you're using?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. As good as anything on the market, I think, range-wise. If not better, yeah. The original ones, the RS1s, were actually not that dissimilar to Delkims in terms of range. Like 50 meters is fine if there's nothing in between you and the receiver, but if there was, I had it in the next swim just like Delkins, where it was intermittent, shall we say. But they've really addressed that with these new ones. And to be honest, what were the big Fox alarms that we all had? Bigger ones than the MMXRs.
There was a full range of them, was it? DXRs were the ones everyone seems to rave about.
That's right, yeah, DXRs and RXs. Sets of them years ago, and I remember the one thing about them was the range was absolutely ridiculous. Like, crazy ridiculous. And the Nash ones are like that. And if you've got a fairly unbroken line of sight, they'll definitely go 600 metres, like across a lake or something. I'm not saying
The other thing that was ridiculous with those buzzers, I remember, you didn't need the receiver sometimes, because you turn the volume on full, that's just going to not just wake you up, it's going to send you through the roof of your bivvy. They were that loud. You have some sort of air raid siren going off. They were ridiculously loud, but they'll fail to wake you up.
The only downside to the Nash ones is the batteries, they're not a battery that you can get from any garage or whatever. And my receiver's actually gone on this trip that I'm on now, and I did have a spare battery which Reedy borrowed on our last fishing trip together in France, so I'm now stuck halfway across Europe with no receiver. But fortunately this week I'm not fishing. Partying this week, yeah. I'm currently sat in a hotel in an apartment in Tisno in Croatia, which is an absolutely beautiful part of the world. I've been to Croatia once before to a festival, this same festival actually, but in a different venue. But it was all kind of self-enclosed on this tiny little town, so we didn't really see much. And we flew, whereas this time, I'll go through the journey. So we left just over 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks yesterday, I think. We left England. We went down to Nash's to pick some bait up and went out for a meal. Had a nice Indian. Like three couples went out for some food, which is a nice start to the trip. Got the 6 a.m. ferry from Dover to Calais. We drove to Berlin. We had a night in Berlin. Pretty interesting, actually. Ended up going out and a few drinks. Found a Korean restaurant, which was... never had Korean food before, but yeah, they cook it all on the table in front of you. Pretty good fun.
It's different.
Then we... we were booked into this amazing water park an hour south of Berlin. So the plan was go to this water park, spend 24 hours there. It's like it's in an old aircraft hangar from the war, but the aircraft hangar's so big they have balloon rides, hot air balloon rides inside the hangar. There's like a beach in there and a rainforest and loads of bars, restaurants, and you know, obviously all the sort of watery based stuff, which all sounds really great. Was looking forward to that. We were booked to stay in the rainforest inside, so you actually camp in these little teepees that are already there. And just as we were leaving Berlin, whatever day it was, Saturday morning, I got the email up for the place, and we already should have been there. I must have booked it for the day before. So we didn't actually go to this amazing water park. We're going to have to go back to that, and it cost me 200 quid for the privilege of not going. So we changed the trip. We drove to Prague.
So just look at that. You can plan the best fishing show in the country, but not a day out at the water park.
No, got the dates wrong. And I did ring up and try and change it over. They wanted like 500 quid or something crazy. So yeah, we decided to skip that. Went to Prague, had a night in Prague. What an amazing city that is. We only had one night there, nice meal and a few beers and stuff, but it's going to be our next weekend break somewhere. There's like on, you know, those like discount sites, Woucher and stuff, there's always Prague trips coming up, two nights including flight for like 70 quid or 80 quid. They come up on there all the time, actually. Yeah, and the city's amazing. I'm probably a bit late going to Prague, as I knew about Prague probably 20 years ago. It was a good place, but it's really nice architecture, buildings. The beer is beautiful. They're famous for their beer over there, and they're all really tasty. I've noticed that in Croatia as well. We were in Slovenia before Croatia, and their beer is kind of like ours, but Croatia, it's different. It's got like a really rich taste. I noticed that in Belgium when we went there one time as well. The Prague beers were lovely, so we're going to go back, I think, on one of these cheap deals one weekend. From Prague we went to, I think we went to the fishing lake in Austria actually, which was fantastic. I blanked. I went swimming in a thunderstorm, which you might have seen the video.
I think we should just talk about your little swim during a thunderstorm, because I just want to know. Well, you know, I've just joined an open water swimming club.
Yeah.
And you know, we put a wetsuit on, a red cap, I look like a giant float, and we go swimming around boys in a lake. It's great fun.
Yeah.
One of the things they don't do is let you go swimming if there's a thunderstorm for safety reasons.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing water.
It's quite a good conductor.
Yes, yeah, I guess so. In hindsight, if the lightning struck the lake, and the storm was overhead as well, by the way, it was it'd been coming for an hour, and then out of the blue, there was just like a freak flash flood type thing. The rain came down. It was right over the top, and then I just heard all my alarms go off. Now, bear in mind, the weather had been awful for fishing. The whole lake was blanking. I think there was two fish out of the lake while we were there. For 5 days, the whole lake was blanking. We'd all been waiting for this thunderstorm. It's weird because like every night there's lightning in the sky, no thunder, no rain, just like the sky's alive every 30 seconds, you know, it's lighting up with a bit of fault lightning or sheet lightning or whatever. It was doing that every night, but we were waiting for conditions to change. Saw the storm was finally coming. It promised us for 3 days and then didn't come anyway. Saw it was finally coming. Shot out in the boat, did all my rods, got them out, absolutely mint, fishing up to this island, and got back in. The heavens opened, we're sat in the bivvy tent thing, which remind me to talk about that as well. It's the best thing NASA ever getting back of me. I borrowed it. I borrowed a prototype shelter. It's a bit like that Avid screen house, you know, the Avid one, but it's really well made. It goes up and down so easy. You can just peg it in like a normal bivvy and it doesn't move, you know, even storm and whatever. Anyway, so yeah, we sat in that, drenched. I mean, it's levering it down. I just heard all the alarms go off. I was like, what's going on? I thought that maybe me, it was that savage, I thought me, me alarms had blown over off the platform. Anyway, it wasn't. Looked out and the boat's in the middle of the lake. Obviously, the motor's down on the boat, so it had gone through all three lines. I'm like, oh no, this is the one little window that I might have a chance of catching a fish, just because of the conditions, and the boat's in the process of wiping out all my rods. So what do you do? Jump in. So I jumped in. Rachel started video. She got a short video of it because it was just Snapchat shut up. But yeah, you can see the lightning coming down while I'm swimming out to the lake grabbing the boat. But yeah, fortunately, I'm still here to tell the tale. But I didn't really think about that at the time, you know. I was just like, right, let's go and get the boat back. It wasn't a case of, this is dangerous. I didn't think it was for a minute. And then I thought about it afterwards. So that's probably not a wise idea.
Actually, you know, quite dangerous. Although, mentioned your Rachel, you know, filming it. She's very polite. She even stopped herself from swearing halfway through it. It was a good little video.
Yeah, we were steaming as well. We'd had a few beers that day.
Well, we had you were steaming drunk and went for a swim in a lake in a thunderstorm.
Well, that's probably why I didn't think about the lightning. Yeah, very probably. Yeah, moving on to that that Nash shelter. I think they're coming out. They're coming out in a few months. I've got the first prototype one that I borrowed, but I fell in love with it. We used it on the camping site when we went to Blaird. It's just a great shelter. I mean, but it's just the way it goes up, the way they've designed the poles and stuff. It's really easy to put up, and it's solid once it's up. The prototype one I've got is green. But I think the ones that are actually coming out are going to be camo, so there might be a chance of me hanging on to this. I'll have to sweet talk. But, but there's two options: hope that they forget they've given it me and just keep quiet, or ask Kev, and you know that bit of ETH that you can't use because it's green and all the others are camo. I'd like to use it. I'd use it as a normal bivvy. I'd use it every time, even though it's huge. But it's nice being in like a big open space like that.
Yeah, you've got us curious. You're gonna have to post a picture of it on the Carpcast Facebook page or the fan page, just so we can all have a look what you're talking about. I'm curious now to see what this looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it looks from the outside like the Avid screen house, but it's the materials, the same sort of material you'd expect on a normal bivvy, you know, quite thick and sturdy. You know, it's not like a cheap lightweight thing. It's pretty heavy, and I don't think it's gonna be that cheap when it comes out. But you can open all four sides. It's got vents at the back, really cool sort of mozzie meshes with the Nash fish logo on it. It's just versatile because, like I said, you can do quite a lot with it, how you set it up, as far as having sides open, two-sided, three-sided, just a roll-up door at the front. Yeah, and the thing I'd like to see on it maybe is a way of having the front door like half up as opposed to all the way, because it's a massive, obviously, open space when it's all open. But when it rained really hard, we left the door open as long as we could. But obviously the water was coming in. I'd like to be able to pull that front door down halfway, maybe, instead of all the way. Yeah. In fact, I guess you could do it by having a double zip on it, just letterboxing it like bivvies conventionally do. I mentioned that actually to Alan and Kevin. But yeah, it's nice having that sort of big space. I mean, all right, you're not going to get it in a lot of swims in the UK. Maybe you are these days, actually.
Okay. Yeah, the way fishing's going with the you know, a lot of the more commercial sort of places, it's, you know, and I think it's going more continental, where it's a whole social event for the family.
Definitely,
I think there's some lakes, like the A1 Pits has always you know, been that way inclined, you know, yes, rightly or wrongly. You know, it's one of those things. It's not to my own personal taste. I like to get away from it, but you don't have to fish waters where that's happening.
One of my favourite quotes.
You don't.
One of my favourite quotes from Gary Bayes many years ago. He said, "If you got a lake and you want it busy, just put a road around it. You don't even need fish." It's pretty much it, isn't it? It's like, as long as you can take your home comforts. Well, look at A1 Pits, you know, the stuff people take there is crazy.
Yeah, and others, and you get people in big black camper vans turning up.
Yeah. So yeah, back to the fishing. So this lake is called R2 in Austria. You'll see more of this lake from the Nash lads. Actually, they went there for their yearly social a couple of months back now, and they've made a film which is coming out later in the year. Remember the one they did on Teliats? I think they called it the social, didn't they?
Well done that.
Yeah, there's another one here, and I think it was fairly epic. They had tough conditions. They had snow and hail and all sorts, and then we had a funny spring, didn't we, this year, which I think when they went, and it was still quite cold. But they had all three lakes, and certain lakes hauled. So lakes 1 and 3 are like runs waters, still got fish too, 30 kilos in them, I think, or 28 kilos, so it's like 60 pound, but stuff full of fish. And then R2 is the one that we fished, and Kevin and Alan fished it as well. It's about 80 carp in 8 to 10 acres, and everybody says it is the hardest lake in Austria. Now I'm looking at it thinking,
really?
80 carp in 8 acres, how hard can it be? So there is crayfish in that one, which there isn't in the other two, so that does make life harder, but they didn't hamper my fishing too much. As long as you're aware of them and, you know, protecting up your hook baits and using plastics and stuff, it was all fine. You know, I saw fish show, although I didn't, spoiler alert, didn't catch anything myself. But like I say, I think it was 3 bites while we were on the lake. And that's what David, the son of Claudia and Harry, who own it. So basically what it is, you've got the three lakes. They've got a shop, which is one of the main shops in Austria. Well, they've got two, actually, one in Graz and one in Forstenfeld, which is where this lake was. It's like any shop in the UK, any big shop in the UK. I was extremely impressed with it. They had like even the Ridge Monkey things in there, you know, they have everything. I think Harry was there's pictures all over the walls of him with big fish from around Europe, from all the top lakes. So I think he's, you know, a very accomplished angler in his own right, but, you know, long time angler. But his son David speaks pretty good English, actually. I did record him for 10 minutes to give us a bit of an update on the lakes and stuff, which we'll play in a minute. But he actually caught the Austrian record two months before we were there. So he's an extremely good angler himself, very switched on young lad. He runs the shop in Graz. But there are one, possibly two fish bigger than the Austrian record in this R2. They've not been out for a year and a half. They've been putting on a steady 4 kilos a year, which is like £8 plus. And they were last out at, I think it was 39 kilo, which is what, high 80s in pounds. So at the growth rates that they're putting on, they're growing really well in there because of the crayfish, basically. There could be two 90 pounders in the lake, with one of them approaching 100. So it's a pretty special lake. I'm definitely going back. I'd like to get back this year. I'm not sure if I can. It's quite comfortable fishing. You know, you can use boats and motors. The swims are fairly well spaced, as far as, you know, the water that you get in front of you. You're fishing for 80 carp in 8 to 10 acres. So David said to us that it does, this time of year, it does 4 or 5 fish a week. That's it. He said, you want to come in the autumn or in the spring, because that's what, you know, when it does plenty of bites. So I will go back at one of them peak times. But to be fishing for that stock of fish, I think, in fact, let me just play the interview out with David now. I'm doing it from memory, where he will tell us. So, yeah, let's get David on.
With me here, David from the Carp Centre in Austria. David Rechtbacher?
Yeah, Rechtbacher.
Rechtbacher. That is close enough for me. welcome. Hello. Thank you for having us down at the lakes here. Three fantastic lakes with some very big fish in. But you've been catching some big fish yourself, I believe. A monster carp in Austria very recently.
Yeah, that's right. Firstly, it's nice to meet you. Yes, I caught a very nice carp 2 months ago here in Austria on a nice gravel bit with 38 kilogram.
Wow. And how did you catch it? What bait? Or
I used the new crayfish boilies, the Key Cray from Nash Bait.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I've used it a little bit in England. I've had success on some waters and not on others. It seems to be work well on some waters and not on others. It's a funny one for me. I always stick with the Scopex squid that I know I have confidence. But I'm glad to hear that you've caught on the Key Cray, and I believe that's the second biggest fish in Austria. Is that true?
It is exactly. For the moment, it was the biggest carp in Austria, but it was also caught with a higher weight, with up to nearly 40 kilos. Oh. It was caught by a friend of mine for 2 years ago, I think. Yeah.
Okay. And the lake we're sat on now, R2. There's an even bigger fish in here, we believe.
Yeah, we think so. I think we have the biggest common in Austria inside, because this carp is now not caught for 1.5 years. And the last time he was caught was with, I think, over 38 kilo. And this carp made about 4 to 5 kilograms every year. So, yeah, I think he should be over 40 kilo in the moment.
Wow, so that is... In English, that's over 90 pounds.
Yeah, about 90 pounds, yeah.
And tell us about the rest of the stock for this lake. I've been told by everybody fishing here that this is one of the most difficult lakes in Austria. It's a tough lake?
Yeah, it's a really tough lake. It's very crazy. You can have a time where you have really good times where you catch a lot of carps, and also you can have a bad time where you can... not even caught one. This is the problem here. Yeah,
like me this week. Yeah. I have not caught one.
I think it's not the best time for the moment. The weather is not the best. Yeah, but you have one night left, so anything can happen.
Yes, anything can happen. But so, what are the other big fish in here? What is the average weight? If you catch one fish, how big is it usually?
I think the average weight should be about 40 pounds.
Wow, so like 20 kilos.
I think it's harder to catch one carp below 40 pounds than over 40 pounds.
Wow, and that's why we've travelled here. That's why we've driven 10 hours from the UK, because of the amazing fish that are in this lake. And how many fish are in the lake?
We think it should be around 80 carp.
Right, and the average size is 40 pound or bigger.
Yeah.
So how many, say, 25 kilo fish?
25 kilo fish, we think about, should be 25 kilo, over 25 kilo, it should be 25.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and also there should be, I think, 7 to 8 carp over 70 pound.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really nice stock here.
That is crazy. I'm sure after hearing this, I'll be and with the new Nash video that's going to be coming out, that was filmed on here as well. You're going to have a lot of English people travelling to Austria, I'm sure. And there's two other lakes as well, isn't there, that are a bit easier than this one?
Yeah, we have here on the left side the R1, and on the right side from here the R3.
And they have lots of fish?
Yeah, the R1, we call it the beauty lake, because there are some really nice linear, full scale and koi.
Yeah.
So really nice carp. And on the R3 are also really big carp and a lot of catfish, up to 2 meter 40.
2 meters 40, wow. Yeah. So that's maybe 80 kilos? 80 kilos?
Yeah, I think up to 90 kilos maybe, yeah.
Wow. That's big. And how big do the carp go in both the other lakes?
On the R3, up to 30 kilo.
Yeah.
And on the R1, at the moment, I think the biggest one should be 28, 29, also nearly 30 kilo.
Wow. And you have amazing weather. It's compared to England, it's warm all the time. I've been for a swim today to fetch my boat, and it's like
nice.
It's like a swimming pool, yeah. So tell us more about fishing in Austria. Or you're quite central here to Hungary, to Slovenia. So do you fish everywhere yourself?
Yeah, I fish everywhere if I find the time, because in Austria most of the lakes are very full because we have not so many good carp waters but a lot of carp anglers, so it's hard to get good places at the good swims, so yeah.
And what is your favorite country to fish in?
I really love to fish in Hungary, also Croatia. Last week I was in Spain, but just for a bass.
Okay. Do you fish for everything then, carp, bass?
More and more for other types of fish, but the last years just carp. So my whole life I think I just was on carp fishing.
And Kevin Nash tells me that you're a very good angler. That and when he says that about somebody, it's because somebody is a little bit special, maybe. So do you have tactics or some tips you can give us? Or?
This is really nice to hear from Kevin. Tips. This is hard to say because I think every water is different. So you can't give a general tip for carp fishing. You have to study every water, then you can give some special tips. It's hard to say from here.
So you think when you go to a new water, are you looking, when you're learning the new water, are you looking for features, deeper water, bars, stones?
Yes, it also depends on the water. If I come new on a big water, the most important thing is for sure location, to study the water. Where are the carps? From where are coming the carps? Where are the holding areas? Is there a dead wood or something special inside? And yeah, it takes a long time to study a water exactly. But yeah, this is the difference between the angler, I think, because some anglers catch, some catch not so many. So
yeah, I always say the same thing. Location. It doesn't matter how good the bait is, how good the rig is, if you're not on the fish, you're not going to catch them.
The most important thing is your brain. Yeah.
Yeah. But a good angler with a good rig and good bait, who also knows where the fish are, will catch more than an average angler.
Exactly, everywhere. Yes.
Yeah, okay. And I noticed in the Carp Centre shop, I've only been in you have two shops, don't you? One in Graz?
One in Graz and one here in Fürstenfeld.
How do you say that? Fürstenfeld?
Fürstenfeld.
Which is where we are now, where the lakes is. And it seems to be very stocked. I even saw the Ridge Monkey stuff in there, which are a new English brand. And you have everything, all the main companies, CC Moore, Nash. It looked like an England shop.
Yeah, it's a well-stocked shop, I think, yes.
And the Graz one is the same?
Yeah, it's the same. It's maybe a little bit bigger because it's on how do you say, on two areas?
Two levels,
yes.
Yeah, so for me to walk into a fishing tackle shop in, 10 hours drive from home, and it just looks like all the English items with the fantastic lakes so close. And if people wanted to travel here and not drive, if they wanted to fly, could you hire them equipment maybe if they wanted to fish?
We think about this in future. Yeah, this should be not a problem soon. So because the next airport from here is just, I think, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So I think it's easy.
I would certainly travel to these lakes. They fish to close to £100, between £90 and £100. Runs waters, easy lakes, hard lakes, big fish, carp shop nearby, all the equipment and good advice from good anglers. It seems like a fantastic place to come for a holiday. Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
No problem, mate.
Let us know when you catch another big Austrian fish.
For sure.
Thank you.
Thank you also.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under the Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
Yeah, so what a fantastic lake. Fishing for that volume of large fish with two potential fish closing in on mid-90s to £100, it's crazy. And it's not that expensive, you know, compared to, say, it's no more expensive than fishing a week on one of the linear lakes or something like that. And it's 2.5 hours drive from Lake Bled, or 3 hours max. So the one thing about Lake Bled is it's absolutely stunning, and I want to go there every year that you're allowed to fish it. We had an amazing time there, and still only did a few hours fishing. Did actually manage to catch one, but with this lake being like 2.5-3 hours drive from there, it breaks the journey up a little bit, and it's nice. The way Lake Bled works is there's no night fishing. There's only 10 carp anglers allowed on the lake per day as well, so you have to book now if anyone's going in. That's just changed this year, so if anybody's going, make sure you book your tickets online beforehand, because you can't buy the tickets from the campsite anymore or from the fishing shop in the town. You have to pre-book online. Yeah, they're basically clamped down. I think it's since obviously the Eurobank's on there, it's just got really busy. But because it's such a beautiful tourist spot, they don't want carp anglers, you know, tons of gear lying around. The rules are quite strict on what equipment you can take. You can take a chair, but not any sort of bed. You're not allowed any sort of shelter, brolly, anything like that. There's a load of stuff. So it's pretty tough fishing, because there's a 2-hour window in the morning. You're allowed to fish an hour before sunrise. So you can actually get on the lake fairly early, like 4 a.m. And then you can fish till 11 p.m. at night. But it's so hot in the daytime that generally you've got a 2-hour window in the morning, 2-hour window at night. But if you to fish it properly, you've got to fish till 11 o'clock at night. Most of the bites are in that last half hour, sort of half 10 till 11, and then you need to be up, out, and fishing again by 4 a.m. in the morning. So you imagine doing that two nights in a row, fishing till 11, getting back to the campsite and something to eat or whatever. Then you know, up at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning to get out. It's a big lake as well, so even if you're on bikes, I was using my scope rods and in a rucksack and getting around on a bike, but it's still hard work. You try doing that 2 or 3 days in a row, you are shattered. So this Austria lake being 3 hours away, with some pretty amazing fish and not too expensive, it just seems perfect. After doing a week on Bled where it's like hard graft, it's just nice sometimes to get a bivvy up, sit behind the rods, you know, and relax a bit, isn't it? So I'm gonna do that Austria lake and Bled together pretty much every time I go, and I recommend anybody else who's going out to Bled to seriously consider going to Austria. And if you just want to go to the Austria lake on their own, I did mention this with David, but they are looking at doing like a fly package where they supply the equipment, pick you up from the airport, and take you to the lake, and you know, supply everything. So and they are looking into doing that now. But yeah, just like to say thank you to David, Claudia, Harry, and Marco in the shop as well. They were very, very welcoming to us, and it was even though I didn't catch a fish, it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience, and I cannot wait to go back. Moving on, have you seen anything on the net this week, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
I think there's been some big news with a big fish.
A big
fish is no more.
Big news with Big Rig.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know what stuff you've read on the net. I've been on holiday, obviously, so I've not been on Facebook much. I was so angered by some of the stuff that I've seen written this past week, and that I phoned you up and said we need an emergency podcast now. we need to get this out. Because obviously I went down to look at old Rob Hales' waters, as you know from the previous Rob Hales interview that we had on there, and it seems to be that he's angered a certain part of the carp fishing community, and I don't get it. I don't really understand why. It just seems that he's pretty good at what he's doing, and that seems to be the main reason that people don't like it, because he's creating these big fish by making absolutely optimum circumstances. I mean, the only lake that you would say is is borderline engineered is maybe the avenue, and it's not easy to get on the avenue. You know, you ain't just ringing up and getting a ticket for the avenue. You know, you've got to fish his other legs first, and you know, get to know him. It's in the grounds of his house, so he's very protective over it, as you'll hear in the interview in a minute, because I did get 10 minutes with Rob to discuss the situation. But he closes it for 10 weeks a year spawning. I mean, there's no fish better looked after in the country than his fish, and I'm quite happily put my balls on the line and say that, you know, his facilities are amazing. Maybe he has tried to grow fish as big as he possibly can, but because he's good at it, and they seem to have gone £10 bigger than other people that have done similar things, people hate him, and I just don't get it. You know, the lakes are all stunning, his fish breeding facilities are stunning. His mortality rate is lower than almost anybody's in the country. He just doesn't lose fish very often. And this, I've seen comments like he was force feeding the fish. I mean, what do you do? Put a carp on a lead and drag it down and stuff its face in the pile of food? I mean, how do you force feed a fish?
Yeah, I've been you know, thinking about that one, but I don't know how much feed was the. Was he putting in the avenue? I'm assuming if he closes it for spawning time, he's going to be you know, supplementing the food, because, well, I don't know the exact stockage, you'll know better than me, but Big Rig wasn't the only kipper in there, so...
No, well, the Big Rig...
need some food.
Big Rig was actually grown in the Little Avenue, which is like a small sort of... I forget how big it was now, two, 3 acres or something. It's a small, quite intimate lake, completely natural, been there years. It's not been hand dug or anything. It's an existing lake that's been there a long, long time. And he grew it with a number of other fish that he bought. As you know, the key to growing big carp, and Kevin Nash did this on his Cops Lake, the key to growing big carp is not fishing for them, so that they eat when they want to eat, and they're not scared of eating because they might get caught. You know, the you have to make them tame, really, to grow them as big as they can. And obviously he bought a stockfish. It's quite surprised me, actually. It wasn't young when he bought it. He reckons that fish could have been 16, 17 years old, which is, again, I mean, never let the facts get in the way of a good internet slagging. But the fish didn't die because it was too big. It died because it was full of spawn. Its vents were open. It was so heavy he couldn't lift it out of the water. And it died, as fish do, as everybody loses fish during spawning time. Because of spawning, it's a sad fact of carp. And if it was one of his other fish, nobody would have said anything. It's just because it's this big one that's caused so much controversy in such a short space of time. But I know Kevin Nash did exactly the same thing in the Cops. You know, he reckons the big one in there before it died hit £70. Which is no different to what Rob Hales has done. Yes, and he did it by feeding them and not really having people fishing for them, and that's how you grow big fish. Make sure the water's right, make sure the oxygen levels are right so the fish can digest it. But you can't force feed them. If you put too much bait in a lake, it creates ammonia and the fish stop eating. Like, so why would anybody overfeed a lake? Because it's detrimental. It just degrades the water quality, the fish can't digest it, and they eat less. So you cannot overbait a lake in that type of environment. You've got to keep everything optimal. I understand it was, you know, let's see how big we can grow fish in that type of environment. But, you know, stuff I've read, like, you know, the fish was force-fed. I've heard people say they want him done for animal cruelty because he's what he's done to that fish. I mean, is that not ridiculous?
Well, if you're going to be done for animal cruelty, then we'll all be getting done for sticking hooks in the faces.
Well, I got suckered into one internet debate, and that was my exact retort. My retort was, you stick a hook in their mouth and drag them out of their natural habitat for fun, and you want somebody else done for cruelty to fish.
Because he fed them,
yeah. and gave them the most perfect environment to live in. Yeah. I've seen comments that the, you know, the Little Avenue was heated, it was kept at a certain temperature. That's all not true. It's just a lake. It's just a normal, well, it's a pondy type lake, but it's, you know, it's covered in trees, looks quite chalky. it's, you know, God knows, it's probably been there longer than I've been alive, that lake, and it certainly wasn't heated. So, I don't know. I mean, it's probably a good opportunity to get Rob on now. Shall we just let him have a listen to this?
Hi, Jamie.
Hi, Rob. How are we doing?
Not so bad, mate. Where are you?
In Croatia, currently.
Are you really? Are you a Zubar?
No. I am fishing next week. This week we're at a festival in a place called Tisno. It's like a music festival, but we are fishing a lake in Croatia next week. But I'm not allowed to say what it is or where it is. It's one of the lesser known ones.
Lovely, fantastic. Well, I hope you have a good time.
Thank you very much. Your week's been a bit topsy turvy, I guess, has it?
Yeah, it has indeed. Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that, unfortunately, you know, I said to the syndicate, you know, I never allow any of my fishery, you know, my members or my customers fish for ghosts. You know, I wrote to the members straight away. I'd been away, came back, my son told me we'd lost a fish in the avenue, went out, and sure enough, it was the big girl. But, you know, as I said to the syndicate, the very nature, or the very fact that she's the biggest is, you know, almost certainly she's the oldest, you know. She's not, she wasn't a young fish, you know, she doesn't got that size and a young age. And unfortunately, you know, event was very dilated. She was obviously trying to spawn, very successfully spawned in previous years, but for some reason this year, it didn't happen, and we lost her. I mean, the fishery is shut for 10 weeks. We have a very, very long close season on the avenue to make sure the fish spawn in peace, recover okay, are fed, get their energy levels back up before the fishing recommences. So, you know, there's no way it can be attributed to angling or any one angler in any way. It was just a natural death, you know, one of those things, I'm afraid.
And I'm guessing that the news wouldn't have been quite so dramatic if it was any other fish in the lake that it could have easily happened to. The fact it was such a controversial fish in the first place has opened the floodgates for the haters. I've seen some ridiculous stuff. I started getting involved in replying to people and ended up in... It seems to have moved a lot of carp anglers, you know, mainly in the negative way that I've seen. I mean, you know, I've spoke to you before about this. You've got one of the lowest mortality rates as a fish breeder, but so I think there's an assumption out there that, you know, this fish was an experiment, you forced it to the weight that it's at, and, you know, the fish has now died because of it.
No, you know, it's a rubbish. The haters, as you call them, I mean, they are idiots, you know, uneducated idiots. I wouldn't waste my breath on them, personally, but, you know, you're quite right. I mean, you know, during the summer this year, we lost two doubles on the monument through natural causes after spawning, and what's the difference? There's none whatsoever, you know. Is there a hoo-ha about that? No, of course, not at all. But, you know, in this game, you know, that's what it's all about. There aren't many fisheries in the country that don't lose one or two fish after spawning every year, particularly if they're commercial pressured fisheries. You know, that's the name of the game. And as for the force feeding comments, you know, again, you know, uneducated, ridiculous. I mean, the fish is fed. The only difference being it wasn't in an angling environment. You know, I can't go down in a diving suit and force food down the carp's throat. You know, we throw food in the lake like we would in any other fisheries. No different to the anglers coming in numbers and piling in boilies on a holiday venue. The difference is I'm putting in the boilies myself for a fish that I know isn't getting competition against her when she feeds, and she's not being angled for, so they're really a little bit more than normal because they're not being pressured. But, you know, that's basically it. You can't force feed a carp. It's a nonsense.
No, and I've seen the fishery, you know, the RH fisheries, where you breed the fish, and, you know, I've seen it all with my own eyes, and, you know, those fish are better cared for than probably many, many fisheries in the country, you know. I can't really compare it to other fish breeders, but certainly, you know, your carp get a better life than probably 95% of all the carp in the UK. I know you're very stringent with your syndicates as well, and how the fish are handled and everything. So it angered me when I saw some of these comments, to be honest.
I appreciate it angering you, and I can understand why, and I appreciate your support. But you know, the reality is, I haven't got a clue what they're talking about. I mean, the Avenue has a 10-week closed season. You tell me another, you know, commercial fishery or syndicate fishery that shuts for 10 weeks. You know, we don't run it on a profit-making basis. You know, the Avenue wouldn't even make a profit this year, the amount of money that's been reinvested into the fishery. So it's done just for the love of the sport and the love of the fish, really. And everybody's their own, you know, whether you go fishing, you grow fish, whatever your love is, you know, I wish everybody well. My passion in sort of more recent times has become a fish farmer rather than an angler. You know, I take a lot of satisfaction out of growing the fish. I spoke to Angling Times only the other day, and they asked me the question, would I do it again? Absolutely. You know, I mean, every other year we net the Avenue to take out the roach, and we actually destock 30s now. We're blessed with a huge head of big fish. We've got 34 different 40s, 550s and a 60. And I'm not against taking one of the exceptional young mid-40s out this coming winter and going through the whole thing again, and hopefully this time with it being a younger fish having more success.
How old do you think Big Rig was?
Everybody's asked that question. I mean, when I bought her as a parcel of three fish, the dealer I bought them from would say they're 12 to 14 years old. I don't know whether that's, you know, it's very difficult to be accurate, but so you've got to say she was somewhere in the region of 15, 18 years of age, possibly even more, you know. And, you know, in a pressured environment of a fishery, you know, you cut their lifespan a little bit shorter. We moved her, as you know, the previous year to spawn from, and that was hugely successful. I mean, that was the most satisfying thing of it, about it all. We've got 5,000 of her babies to grow on for the future. As one-year-old fish, they are by far the biggest one-year-old fish I've ever seen in my life. Fish farm sales are fully sold out this year, so that sort of tells you what the majority of people, you know, think of the fish and what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I fish for some of the lowest stock and oldest carp in the country, and you know, everybody's fishing is personal, but what you're doing, there's a demand for big fish. You know, they're very healthy fish, as we've said before. You don't lose that many of them, you know, compared to some other sort of breeders. And you know, I know that from personal experience of having bought fish for you know, our club. You know, we've lost fish with every stocking with it we've ever had. I think maybe some people have the attitude that you're trying to, like, force UK carp fishing, you know, artificially creating fish bigger than we're just naturally meant to have. And I think maybe that sticks with some people, but I don't know, every single fishery that's got massive fishing, you can't get on, you know, in the country. You try getting a Wellington Country Park ticket, you know, people want to catch big fish, or the majority of people want to catch big fish.
Yeah, it's no different to any other business, Jamie. It's supply and demand, and you know, we know from the amount of inquiries we get at RH Fisheries that fill a big fish. You know, if I suddenly decide to sell a load of 30s and 40s, I'll be absolutely besieged. Everybody wants big fish, you know. Fisheries want big fish, anglers want bigger fish, and all I'm doing is just to see what can be achieved in this country. You know, if you get an exceptional fish, there's two things. You know, you can argue, you know, the record should be split. There should be a record for fish that have grown in a fishery, in their whole environment lives, and fish that have been grown on outside a fishery. Because if all we ever do is allow the fish to grow in the fisheries, the ceiling of the biggest weight in this country isn't going to get an awful lot bigger. You know, 60, 68 is about probably where we're going to be in 10, 15 years' time. If you want to move the sport forward and grow fish on in a fish farm environment where they're not being angled for, then, you know, I've proved £70 possible, and I believe possibly even 75, 80 is possible. You know, if this fish hadn't died sadly spawning, she may have gone on to achieve greater things. I mean, she was certainly a lot bigger than 71 pound when I found her. I didn't weigh her, but I could barely lift her out of the water. So, you know, she'd put on more weight, albeit eggs.
Yeah.
But in trying to born naturally. She'd met her day, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sure the haters are still going to hate. The facts are, you know, the fish was trying to spawn, it was dilated, it was full of eggs. And, you know, at least they're going to hear it from the horse's mouth. So thank you for talking to us. And, you know, I know from having met you and seen the fish farm that you're not doing this for money. As you know, some people think it's you're just, you know, you don't need the money and you're trying to create something good. And I think there's just some jealousy out there. I think people see...
I think in all walks of life there's jealousy.
Yeah, it's a shame, but thank you for talking to us, Rob. And I'll look forward to the next one.
All right, Jamie, it's a pleasure. Have a great trip.
Cheers, pal. Bye-bye.
Bye, mate. Bye-bye.
So there you have it. Whether you choose to believe it or not, they are the facts from Rob. It died of a fairly natural spawning or unable to drop its spawn. It wasn't a particularly young fish. It's not like he's grown it to 70 pounds in 6 years. It was always a flyer. Like, at the end of the day, there are freaks that are abnormal. The one thing Rob didn't say in that interview, but he did say, you know, when it was first caught at 70 pounds and we had him on then with all the hoo-ha, he said then that was one of three fish that he bought. I think that was the biggest at, was it 29 or 39? I can't remember.
I think it was 39,
It was 39, yeah. And he bought two other low 30s. Now, those other low 30s were in the little avenue being fed the same food as Big Rig, and they'd not done anything like what Big Rig have done. Big Rig was a freak. You get fish in a lake that grow 15 to 20 pounds bigger than anything else in the lake. And that's not because the anglers are feeding it up. It's because that fish is a freak. Two-tone, you know, 20 pounds bigger than anything else in that lake. The Fat Lady, 15 pounds, 18 pounds bigger than anything else in that lake. I don't know what the backup fish are in Wasing with the parrot, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be 15 to 20 pounds bigger than anything else in that lake.
Yeah, I think then. Next biggest I've heard of from there is the floppy tail lady, about 48, so yeah, same again.
Yeah, same again. So these fish are freaks, and that's why Rob bought that fish, because it was, he paid a lot of money for it. I think you have to buy them at auction, he said on the earlier podcast. You can't just go and, you know, give us your biggest fish. You've got to bid for him. So he's invested so much time and money into this. It's not about the money. I think people seem to think that he's just, it's a cash cow for him. He's just generating money. The guy's a multi-millionaire. Never has to work again. He's passionate about carp and fish breeding. He's in a fortunate position to be able to throw money at it. And I'm not pretty sure, I'm saying this unqualified, but I definitely know he doesn't do it for the money. And I'd be surprised if he's broke even on the fish breeding stuff because of the investments that he's put into it. So money is not his motivation in this. And I don't know, some of the comments that I read when I got stuck into a couple of arguments with people, and it seemed like they already had a bee in his bonnet about him, that he's just sticking two fingers up at carp fishing, and, you know, it's like, I'll do what I want, I don't really care about the, you know, their heritage or anything else. I saw a comment today even, there's somebody saying, why doesn't he grow nice looking fish? Well, he does. He's got the Western Park strain, the really scaly ones that just don't grow as big, but he sells them. Go to his website, rhfisheries.com, and you can buy the pretty ones that will still grow better than, you know, a Lini, say, you know, or some typical heavily scaled fish that we've come to know from years gone by. So I think some of it boils down to plain jealousy. You know, the old you know, he's different to us, he's got money and he's just trying to rinse carp fishing for everything that it is. And I think that's a lot of people's attitude. And having met Rob, having seen the lakes, that is not his motivation. You know, he's got really into fish breeding as a hobby and wants to do it as good as he can. And as he explained on the earlier podcast we had him on, he hasn't got a lifetime to, you know, spend 40 years growing some really pretty, you know, 1-2 pound a year growth rate fish. He hasn't got that time to do that. So I don't know. His haters are always going to hate. It became quite clear this week that people are not going to change their mind if they already didn't like what he does. But he provides some extremely good lakes. The Avenue is probably the only one that's still under his... Every other lake's just a syndicate lake that he's got. It's no different to any other syndicate I've ever been to. You know, the Acton syndicate and stuff. The top lake, which has now got 23 40s, I think Rob said, up to 49. I mean, that wasn't the main lake on there. It was the bottom lake that had the two biggins in the 250s. I think have gone now. But the top lakes come through over 15 years. The reason why is, there wasn't 23 40s in it 10 years ago, that's for sure. They've just grown completely naturally in a typical northern or Midlands mere. So, and all these other syndicates are like that, Sitch is like that. It's an it's a really old lake, it's got a forest around it. The only one that's, was hand dug and is his baby is the Avenue, and you ain't getting to fish on the Avenue. I'm telling you that now. The average Carpcast listener is not going to get on the Avenue for a number of years. You would have to go and fish some of the other lakes and then get personally invited to the lake. And he's very clear with the anglers that fish there. He says there's a 10-week closing period because the fish come first. You have to ring him when you catch any biggins. He tells you that I am going to feed the lake, when there's nobody on or whatever, I will be putting bait in and feeding. And he makes it very clear, and then it's your choice if you fish it or not, if you're lucky enough to get a chance. And the stock in there is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, in truthfulness, that's not the sort of fishing that appeals to me. But why would I judge if somebody else wants to do that? They want to go and catch. I think there's still a 60 left in there. There's a lot of 50s and 35 40s, I think. And you have, I think, 750s, a 60 and 35 40s. I mean, they take 30s out just to try and keep keep the big ones getting bigger. I mean, but it doesn't affect you. If you don't want to fish there, don't fish it. But the other syndicates that Rob has are no different to any other quality syndicate in the country, of which you can join. You can get on the list and join it. Was it last episode? So 74 maybe, where Rob tells you individually about all the lakes. I fished Acton earlier this year in the open access in the closed season. We've got a week booked on there that we will be selling places to later on Acton, because it was a quality lake. I really enjoyed the session that I did on there. So I don't know, I'm trying to think of a way to summarize this, but as usual, it's an internet hate campaign.
Yeah, all I can really add to that is it affects you or anybody out there in absolutely no way whatsoever. It's not your fish. You don't fish the lake unless you're one of a small, very small minority. So who cares? That is honestly my opinion. I see Big Rig. It's a shame a fish has died, but it's a fish, and fish die every day. It's just because of what it is. But let's move on.
What do you think of the people that are wishing it dead?
Good. I try not to think of them. Bunch of knobs.
Yes, absolute idiots. If you call yourself a carp angler, somebody that enjoys the environment, enjoys the nature, and you're wishing a fish dead because it grew bigger than all the others, it was a freak flyer. Just go back to the point about, people saying it was overfed or force-fed. Well, firstly, you can't overfeed because the fish will just stop eating because the ammonia levels get too high in the water. The oxygen drops and they don't want to eat. But secondly, the other fish that Rob bought at the same time as Big Rig, they're not 70 pound. And they were taking the same feed. He has automatic feeders on there that drop a certain amount at different times of day. Fish feeding pellets. The guy spent millions in investment in his thing. He's not going to try and kill his fish. He's trying to give him the most optimum life possible. But none of the other fish are 60 pound. that he bought. In fact, I think when he first came on, when Big Rig first got caught at 70, I think he said they're still like low 40s, the other two fish. And they're in exactly the same environment as the one that's apparently getting force-fed. It's just ridiculous. Yes, I'll give people the benefit of the doubt if they don't know the facts, but if you still choose to be an absolute hater after knowing the facts, you might not agree with, you know, how Rob's fish look. We know that fish grow bigger if they have no scales. There's plenty of other lakes that have grown fish to almost 60 pound, you know, from similar sources. Fenland fisheries that supply a lot of these fish sell to lots and lots and lots of lakes around the country. You know, Rob's, as he said in the interview, 2 years in advance on his fish orders. So it's supply and demand, same as in any business. And just because Big Rig was a freak of nature, no different to the Ways in Fish, the Fat Lady, Two Tone, and I'm sure all the other ones, if you know a lake that's got a fish that's £20 bigger than anything else in there, that's the fish. It's not what's happened to it. That fish was always going to do that. It's just unfortunate that it was the most controversial fish that decided it couldn't drop its spawn this year and unfortunately suffered the consequences. But if you're an angler, if you're a so-called carp angler that loves his sport and you're wishing a fish dead, then you need to have a serious word with yourself. It means your own personal hate is coming in front of the best interests of a carp, which kind of tells me what type of angler you are.
Is that Jamie's rant of the week then?
Yes, definitely was a rant that, wasn't it? I mean, you know, you can choose not to like what Rob and what Rob does. I think maybe trying to claim the record for an artificially grown fish, I think that's one of the reasons why there is so much hate. People, you know, like catching a British record was kind of a goal that 99.999% of anglers will never get a chance to do. But we all remember the Chris Yates and the Richard Walker, and it's a little bit mythical, isn't it? It's to do that. And I guess when somebody artificially grows a fish to that size, it does take away from that nostalgic like romanticism. But as Rob did say in the interview, there should be two records. There should be a record for the biggest fish in England, i.e. under any circumstances, you know, how it grows, and then there should be the actual fishing record, which is, you know, natural waters and unnatural waters, or natural waters and artificial waters. There should be a difference, I think.
There's something just out of interest while I've been listening to you there. What do you think the biggest koi would be? As in, I'm not talking about fish for koi, but koi that people keep in heated ponds and artificially feed and artificially grow on.
It's a good question. I know.
What do you think they can reach? Because they are just carp.
I know there's been 40 pounders in natural lakes, hasn't there, that have grown. That one in the river up near you, wasn't there? That was that go to mid 40s.
Yeah, there's one in the Trent for a while, although I don't know the true story of it, but I do believe it flooded out of a fish farm years back and ended up in the river. So
yeah, I mean, you're saying that koi are just normal carp, but they are ornamental, like pretty fish, and the pretty ones don't grow that big, do they, because they're pretty. Like, you need no scales for it to grow really big. So I'm wondering, ornamental fish, even in optimum, you know, heated water, fed every day. Obviously, the koi breeders, they spend a lot of money on it, and they, you know, they're testing the oxygen numerous times a day and all the other stuff. I don't really know. But I'd be very surprised if they got one bigger than how big that Trent ghosty was. But do you know what you're just asking?
No, I was pretty sidetracked. I just found a story about a fish that has apparently lived for 226 years.
Wow.
It's a koi. I was trying to actually find the biggest. I've lost it now, but I did see some mention of someone that had one up to 91 pound in Wiltshire.
Wow. That's surprising.
I've lost that story now. Yeah, it's because I've got fingers like Cumberland sausages, and trying to scroll through things, I generally click on things as well and miss them.
A 91 pound koi. Wow.
Yeah. What's this one? This is a Daily Mail article. Big fish fan splashes out on the world's largest koi carp.
How big?
Interesting. A 4 foot monster that tips the. No. Oh, fucking pop up adverts, hang on. There we go. Sorry about the F word there, but they bug me. The 4 foot monster that tips the scales at a staggering 6.5 stone. What's that in old money? 6.5 stone.
Stone is 40. A stone is 14 pounds, isn't it? So, 60 and 6 times 4 is 24, so it's 84, isn't it? Anyway, we've ranted a bit. There's a couple of news stories I've spotted on the net over the last week. Should we do some on the nets?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Alan Blair was a former Irish dancer. Did you know that?
I did not know. I can just imagine him dressed up in little shamrock outfits. If that Irish dancers, that's, is that where they've got like their arms down the sides and they just like, you know, bounce and kick their legs like in Riverdance?
I just picture
Michael Flatley sort of thing.
Yeah, I picture Riverdance if somebody says Irish dancer. Yeah, but how this has come about is the carp feed, which is the news. Carp news page of Angling Times seem to have done a really good job of it, by the way. That's definitely worth a look, I think. Carp feed, they seem to be coming up with little quirky stories, but they've done a feature. I'll find it now. It's basically about your favourite songs and your sort of musical background. The Alan Blair is the first interview. I had a read through it yesterday. It was quite interesting, actually. I liked some of the questions that they were asking. They put quite a bit of thought into it, I think. I can't get it up now. But yeah, Alan admits to being a former Irish dancer. He started off listening to rock music before. Everyone knows now that his love is drum and bass. But
So he did have taste at one time, then.
I don't mind drum and bass. It's the carp feed, they bill this feature. To be fair, I wish I'd have thought of it, actually. It's something we could have done. Maybe we should. On future interviews, Mark, we'll get a list of silly questions. You know, we've been doing the food ones, haven't we, like people's favourite dish on the bank and stuff like that, but maybe we need half a dozen questions, and some of them can be music related, because I do like, it's called My Fishing Soundtrack, and they advertise it as a Desert Island Discs for carp fishing. Now, is Desert Island Discs still going?
Don't know. I have absolutely no idea.
I may be showing my age, but yeah, it was a Radio 4 thing, wasn't it, where they got people on, and it was your was it your three tracks you'd take on a desert island or something? I can't remember.
Something like that.
Yeah, well, so Alan says he listened to lots of rock and folk, was even an Irish dancer for a couple of years, then he went through all the chart stuff, 80s music, then club scene, firstly house music, then hard house, trance, and eventually D&B, which I didn't know. I just thought he'd always been into D&B, but it's... Some of the questions they're asking, it's a grueling winter session. What song gives you motivation? A song no one would ever believe is on your iPod, which I think is pretty good. You've had a PB and the whole lake's gathered for a celebration. What song captures the mood? They've done some good questions, I think, here. The best road trip anthem, summer sunset track. I like it. I wish I'd have thought of it, but... we may steal it anyway.
let's rip it off now. If you just cut your PB, you're having a party, what's playing? What would you put on?
Oh no, you go first, let
I'm
me
putting
think.
You on the spot.
Can't you go first?
I don't know, it's going to have to be very loud. There's going to have to be a nice big sound system imported, and I know it's probably going to be Slayer or Machine Head or even Rammstein. Just to scare any one off who I don't want there.
To be fair, a lot of my early sort of rock live albums still give me goosebumps to this day.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I did that goosebumps thing. I was going through some stuff in the car and I found the old Slayer album, Rain in Blood, back from 1986.
Yeah.
Probably before a lot of listeners were even born. And just that opening riff of Angel of Death, the first track, you know, full blast, obviously, as I was driving, and that still giving me goosebumps, just makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It's just one of those tracks. I'm sure there's about three people out there who will relate to that, with that track. But and also, I've got to give a shout out to my friend Matt. His band have qualified in this Battle of the Bands thing, and he's a carp angler, and he's playing at the Bloodstock Festival on the Saturday. So shout out to Matt and Hoofknuckle.
Hoofknuckle.
Interesting band name. Well, yes, they're on Saturday at Bloodstock.
Excellent. I saw the Leeds Festival crop up on my timeline the other day, and then looked at it. It was over £200 a ticket. I was like, yeah,
wow.
I'm not going. That seems like a lot of money to me. Maybe not so bad on your own, but if you're taking your missus and maybe a child or something, it's an expensive weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very expensive, because it's not just your ticket. There's your camping, if you're camping, or staying somewhere, and travel, food,
yeah,
drugs.
Yeah.
Paracetamol, obviously.
Yes, for the hangover.
Yes. I don't know what anyone could thought I'd have meant with that.
One of which I've got now, because we had our first big night out in Croatia yesterday. So not fishing this week, but I am fishing next week on a secret lake. Oh, not secret, but I'm not allowed to. Well, I don't know where it is yet. But are you friends with Gasper on Facebook?
No, you've mentioned him before.
The guy is absolutely ridiculously good angler, fishes mainly a bit of Austria and Slovenia. It's where he lives about 20 minutes from Lake Bled, and he fishes a lot in Croatia, so he's actually on holiday this week, but he's going fishing the day before we leave here. He came down to see us on Bled last week. Shout out to Ollie Davis and Alan Blair, who actually introduced us to him. They met him on Bled when they did the film over here. And he's going to take us. It hooks us up with a lake to go to. And then when he found out that we were going to be fishing the same days as him, he's like, listen, forget that lake. Come with me to one of these, as long as you don't say where it is. There's a choice of two. Lakes is, we're going to decide which one. They're both quite near each other, but plenty of fish to 30-35 kilos, I think, so it's pretty decent stock. So we're going to go fishing with Gasper, who does seem to be an extremely good angler. And one of the things we're doing, we're discussing putting trips on next year to be part of the VIP carp holidays thing that I've been running. He's got 3 to 4 lakes in Slovenia that we can run trips to, so we can either do guided tours, supply the equipment, or drive and survive, and maybe throw a Bled trip in with it. As I explained earlier, Bled's, it's pretty tough to fish because it's hard work. You can do it for 3 or 4 days in a row, you know, you're getting 2-3 hours sleep a day if you're going to fish it properly, so it's pretty tough. But I actually think if we've got a lake nearby where you can bivvy up and fish conventionally, then taking somebody off to Bled for a couple of days, you know, get them a room booked in the hostels or whatever, give them a guided tour of Bled. Nobody knows Bled better than Gasper. He catches fish from there all the time. So we may be adding the Slovenia trips. And if you've never been to Slovenia, it's literally a beautiful part of the world, probably one of my favorite places I've ever been. While we were fishing in Bled, like, I think I fished 2 evenings and 1 morning. I only fished like 10 hours in total. I did actually catch a fish, but it was only a small one, and it was at night, so I haven't got the money shot with the picture in front of the big church. Oh, my thread's gone. That's a day's partying for you.
Yeah, I've noticed you've not been on top form today, but I think you're doing quite well, because for the hangovers usually last about 3 days at our age.
It's a week or more, especially after the day we had yesterday. It was a, a boat party, and so we're out for 6 hours on the boat, stopped at like a restaurant halfway, had 2 hours in the restaurant, and then we were partying all night anyway, considering we went out about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon and turned it in about 11 o'clock this morning, I think it was, when we turned it in. So yeah, it was a pretty long session. Wow. Yeah, so but yeah, the talking about three things at once. So yeah, we're going fishing with Gaspar in Croatia. We're looking at doing some trips next year to Slovenia. He's got a few decent lakes with big fish in, and obviously we can put a bled trip in there as well. If we supply all the equipment, then you can just fly over. You don't need to do the mega drive if you don't want. And obviously there is the lake in Austria. If you are driving, I would strongly recommend a week there as well. But let's get back to on the next. We were kind of in the middle of that before I diverged.
Yeah, so
something else I saw on Carp Feed was, you see the two Liverpool lads getting arrested on the lake in Rhyl. I think it was Rhyl. It was in Wales, definitely. For selling drugs, apparently.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, I saw the picture and I read a bit of the story. I didn't read much about it, but what was happening? Was it just someone bivvied up, dealing out the bivvy as it looked, or...?
Well, we've never really spoke much about the sort of the smoking culture on lakes, have we? Like, because it's definitely there. If you go carp fishing on any lake in the country, you know it's there. It's a drug that seems to fit in quite well with the sitting behind rods for days on end and just relaxing, chilling and one with nature type thing. You know, whatever your views are on drugs, they are a very common occurrence on every carp, like good or bad, that is the case. How much, if you're a couple of lads on a week's holiday and you smoke heavily, I don't know how much you can get through. I really don't. But these lads, I think they have 3 ounces. Now, they weren't fishing when they got caught. Apparently, the story goes that the local police had noticed some known drug users walking in and out of the park where they were fishing. So they went in to have a look. They thought something must have been going down, i.e. somebody was selling some drugs. And they sent a squad in to raid the lake, basically, and didn't find anything. Saw these two scousers fishing, noticed that the lines weren't in the water, decided to search them. They found a little bit of weed on them, and then they went and got the drug dog in that found a stash of about 3 ounces in the bushes. Now, as far as I'm aware, there were no like scales and bags and stuff. So I don't know if it was, I have no idea. Obviously it will come out when they go to court, I guess, but I've known people take 3 ounces fishing, you know, two or three lads. I've known that'd be the case, number one. Number two, the lines not in the water is what the police say alerted them to the fact that these guys were just at it. They put in the article that they had high-end equipment. Now, we know what an average carp setup costs, don't we, if you've got decent gear.
Yeah.
Three rods, reels, buzzers, bibbies, all the stuff. You're looking somewhere between $6,000 and $10,000, aren't you, for a full setup?
Now, if you're going top end, you can easily get there. Yeah.
So the way the police made this out was, you know, they've spent $10,000 on gear as a cover to sell £600 worth of weed, because their lines weren't in the water. They're clearly not fishermen. That's basically how the article read. Anyway, the carp angling community picked up on it, and if you read every single comment under the article, they're basically saying you've just nicked a couple of lads fishing that were resting the swim. Like, it doesn't make business sense, does it, to sell £600 worth of weed and spend $10,000 on your cover. I think from reading what I've read, which might not be all the facts, but it just looked like two guys gone fishing to me, and it might have just been coincidence that the local smackheads were walking around the lake. Your average weed smoker is not a known drug user to the police. Your smackheads and crackheads, and they're the ones that are the known drug users, because they're in and out of rehabilitation centres, and they're always, you know, doing crime to feed the habit. Whereas, I don't know anybody I've ever come across that smokes weed that has, you know, robbed his nan to pay for it. It's not like that, is it? So, anyway, they seem to get absolutely nailed in the comments. I saw the police. Have you noticed that in recent years, the like local police forces have got a bit of a social media game now. They're kind of like spinning social media for their own gain, as it were, when, you know, like if they catch a burglar or discover a haul of cannabis plants or whatever. And there's a bit of a, they quite often take the piss a little bit as well. I saw one the other day actually, that they'd found a bag, or somebody had handed a bag in, and it had about 10 wraps of what looked like cocaine or something in this bag. And it's they put up a post saying, lost and found, would the owner of these, we have your items waiting for you. And there's a picture of all these bags of coke laid out on the table. If you'd like to come and collect your belongings, then they are here safe at the police station for you. You know, just a little bit of a trolling game. But yeah, by the same token, some of the comments afterwards are pretty brutal. They got nailed. They posted this story up on the actual, you know, whatever the local police force was around there, and they got slated. The general consensus was, you've just caught two carp anglers resting the swim. Like, who spends 10 grand on gear to sell a few ounces of weed? Like, no, they're just carp anglers. I'm not saying they, I don't know, because 3 ounces does seem like quite a lot, but I don't know, I've known some pretty heavy smokers that smoke an ounce a week each per person, so it's not unrealistic that, I don't know, it's, I just don't think it looks good on carp angling in general, because there is a little bit of a weed culture propagated. I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of carp anglers started smoking to be carpy because of some extremely famous carp anglers that used to refer to it in their books as carp fags. I rolled a carp fag, which, you know, everybody knows that meant I'm rolling a joint. There is a culture of it, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people smoke because of an extremely famous angler that never glorified it or anything, and only referred to it subtly. But anyone who's ever fished on a lake where he's been will know. Although I believe he's given up these days, but not the point. Like, I'm not lumping one person in here. There's lots and lots and lots of carp anglers that smoke weed. Yeah, I don't know. We've never, never really touched on it, have we, on this show?
No, a lot of it is there, and it is kind of you know, brushed under the carpet, so to speak. Everyone knows it's happening, but I don't know. I think my outlook of it, and especially over the last 6 months, is it will change a hell of a lot. I mean, not just for the you know, recreational use, although my own personal opinion is the likes of Canada and quite a lot of US states now have, they're going along the right track of legalization and control and taxing it. And yeah. But what does get me is the as you know exactly where I'm going now, don't you, is the medicinal uses of the plant.
Yeah.
Because the more and more I look into that, it is absolutely amazing what is actually happening.
Yes.
And it's absolutely fucking infuriating, the fact that our country is so backwards, they cannot see that that plant can heal a lot of illnesses where, you know, your narcotic painkillers and a lot of other drugs just fail.
No, but they make people lots of money.
They make people shit tons of money, and imagine if we could all grow our own medicine.
Yeah.
What a nice world that would be.
Yeah, well, I was used to, I wonder if like weed within fishing was always brushed under the carpet, because it looks bad because it's, you know, still illegal in this country, as though, as you say, our country seems to be behind half the world now. But I, on my lake, I would rather have stoners than drinkers every day of the week. You know, the effects of being drunk and then being able to function, you know, holding a fish or, you know, landing a fish properly and all the other stuff. Well, we all know what state you get into when you're drunk. And you know, I don't condone drinking on the lake at all, but if you gave me the choice between a stoner and a drinker on my own personal lake, I would take the stoner every single time. You know, they're way more aware, they're way more conscious of what they're doing and how other people look at them, and you know, to the verge of paranoia even. You know, you're extremely aware of your environment as opposed to oblivious to it when you're drunk.
When I was a taxi driver, I'd much rather pick someone up who had a smoke than a drink.
Definitely, people get obnoxious when they've had a drink, and
yeah, they do. Plus, someone who's you know, stoned, they're not going to be doing a runner. They're not going to be bothered. And if they do, I'm going to catch them easy.
No, I bet they're the ones that give the tips as well, because they're you know, it definitely makes you more in tune with the current man or human beings. Can't say man anymore, can we, now in PC world?
Oh, don't get off PC. Jesus, wept.
Shout out to Cat Fee for that story. I saw something. Oh yeah, something else I saw on the net. Carl and Alex, you're aware of them too, aren't you?
Oh yes, a little YouTube superstars.
They are, yeah, YouTube sensation, I would say. They're extremely popular because of the obviously they catch fish, but the creativity of the production is really good. They make a lot of the Nash TV stuff as well now as well, which is all pretty good. But yeah, story that cropped up, I thought was pretty interesting, because we do, I've always travelled a lot for fishing. You know, pretty much every lake I've ever fished has been 200 miles or more from my house. We stop in a lot of service stations, and quite a lot of them have got, you know, some sort of pond and a fountain, I should say. And I've often looked at them and thought, I wonder if there's carp in there. Now, you expect maybe the odd ornamentals or kois or whatever, but I've always wondered. Anyway, Carl and Alex have had a guy who I think is another YouTube blogger, but from America, called John B. In fact, it's a worth a look this as well, because the video that they made during John's week in the UK has just been released. So get yourself over to the Carl and Alex fishing page, and you can watch that. It will certainly, I've not watched it yet, but it will be worth a look, so all their videos are good. I know they did some time on Church Lake as well while John was over, and I think they all caught PBs as well out of there. But yeah, they were obviously travelling somewhere. I think they did a bit of a whirlwind tour, fished a lot of different lakes over the weeks, and they snagged one from a motorway services, Beaconsfield services to be exact, and got gripped while they were doing it. So they got caught and booted off, I think. But yeah, just a bit of opportunist fishing, a little bit of stalking, and yeah, we can get a fishing fix on the way to the lake now. The services. So I wonder if anyone else is going to go and try and do the same at Beaconsfield services.
But so where is that services? Because let's be honest, we all know that there is 30s and 40s in every single puddle once you get south of the Watford Gap.
Yeah, well it is. Is
that
it?
Just proves it.
Beaconsfield is on the M40. It's one of them ones from see the M4 is one of them Oxford ones going towards London. Could probably do a quick Google search here, couldn't I? But I'm sure Beaconsfield is South Buckinghamshire. So yeah, it must be the M40. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is the M40.
Oh yeah, I'm looking on. It's not a million miles from you know, likes of. Oh no, I've just zoomed out. But yeah, I've got Heathrow down there and Slough on the same page.
Yeah, it is on the M40. Yeah, so I wonder what other carp are swimming about in some of the other service station lakes, because if carp anglers get onto it, there's going to be a fair bit of poaching going down, I think.
Is one thing interesting. You know, I've mentioned earlier on I'm just joined this open water swimming thing. Well, they do events everywhere anyway. They've recently announced one for September, which I'm certainly going to be going there, because it is on a lake not a million miles away from me that has done carp over £50 in the past.
Wow.
And I'm legally going to be swimming up and down, or feature finding as they call it.
I did a lot of swimming in Lake Bled actually, which is open water, swimming, I guess. I've been swimming quite a bit as to try and get healthy now. I'm getting old, 45 next month, I think.
Wow, that's ancient.
Yeah, so when we got to Bled, the water's absolutely gin clear, like really clear, and it's just like tap water. I took my snorkel and mask this time. My plan to fish Bled this time was because I was with the missus, and when a holiday, it's not just a fishing holiday. So the plan was to just fish comfortably off the beach, not do any of that hardcore cycling, you know, 3 miles around the other side of the lake at 3:30 in the morning. My plan was to fish off the beach, because when I left there last year, Matty and Spenny, they had about, well, Matty had 10 fish in a day off the beach, which we'd ignored for our entire 2 week trip. We'd ignored the beach, we were fishing all the hardcore bits, and we literally could have walked out the campsite, sat on the beach, swimmers all around, and the carp were just there. This year it was a lot colder, it was 10 degrees at night, which is like winter temperatures even in England. It was really cold. I just don't think the fish were up on the shallow water. It seemed to be a little bit behind, although there was a 30 kilo fish caught off the beach 2 weeks before we got there. But anyway, it was really cold at nights, and I did go out snorkeling one day, and I did see about 8 or 10 carp. That was on the first night when we arrived. And I thought, I'll just go and check, see if there's any fish out there. Went out, and it's amazing. They're all on the bottom, looking in about like 15 foot of water off the beach. The whole of Bled's really deep. It's like really deep, 60 foot plus, most of it, like 95% of it. But there's a couple of shallow areas. I know the beach is one of them. And I seen a load of fish, so I banged 5 kilo bait on top of them with the plan to fish it the following day. And I never saw another carp again on the beach at the end of it. They just weren't really there. Swimming above them, bear in mind there's loads of people swimming and boating and dinghies and sailboards and all sorts off this beach. The carp, they were all really stuck to the bottom, like as if they were looking for food. I don't know if it's the swimmers like churning the bottom up and, you know, uncovering worms, or I don't know what it was, but they did not seem bothered about the busyness of the beach at any point. I did catch some nuisance fish, or nuisance fish or bream. For some reason in Bled, there's millions of chub, and their proper chub look just like our chub, and they're massive. Some of them are like really big, like, I don't know, 18 inches long, something like that, pretty chunky. So I'm guessing they're weighing like 4 pounds. But lots of them, just see groups of them, and I got pestered by them. It was like having crayfish in the lakes. They were just whistling your boilies down, like 20 millis whittling down to nothing within an hour of it being out there. And every time I went out with the snorkel, like, I looked at every boilie that I could see on the bottom in about 15 foot, had like 20 little fish stuck to it, just like sucking it. Yes, it was pretty funny. I don't really remember them last year, the chub. Maybe there's less of them when the carp are there in numbers, I don't know. But yeah, you're the bream angler extraordinaire, and I'm the chub catcher.
Yeah, you know, I remember when a few years back when me and my wife were at the side of Lake Garda in Italy, which, I mean, is Lake Bled, is it a like glacial lake?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because Lake Garda is the same, although it's on another scale. You know, it's 23 miles long, several miles wide, and well over 100 metres deep in some spots. And the only fish I saw there were chub. In a certain area, really? There's lots of them.
So
there's massive carp in there as well.
Somebody messaged me, actually, while I was on Bled, and we were posting pictures up of it, because I cannot stress to you how amazing the place is. And I don't know how long it's going to be open to carp anglers or foreign carp anglers, because it does seem they've got a bit of a downer on carp fishing at the minute. As I said, they're already restricted it. It's like about, it's got to be 300-400 acres, and they restricted it to 10 carp anglers a day.
Wow, that's there's a lot of room for 10 carp anglers.
Yeah, there is. That's why I'm quite excited if we can get this Slovenian tours.
Yeah.
Done for next year, you know, give me a chance to get over there a bit more regularly as well, especially if we're running trips, you'll learn from Gasper as well. He's such a fantastic angler. He's got to be one of the most prolific anglers from that part of the world. Just always putting pictures of huge fish up, you know, like 30 kilo plus, just constantly. But there was a guy, while I was on there, we posted the pictures. There was a guy that I'm sure he said he'd got married on Lake Garda at the same time while we were there. And he was saying that he's watching 40s and 50s swimming about. So you didn't really see any when you were there.
No, I didn't see a single carp. Plenty of chub, like I say, but not saying that, we were there, you know, sightseeing, so we weren't spending too much time looking. Although I did manage to do a bit of open water swimming there as well, and got honked at by a ferry.
Yeah,
that was fun. But yeah, it's a beautiful place. Really, yeah. Nice.
I'm just looking for a message from this lad. I'm sure he might have got married on there on Lake Garda, and he was seeing kippers everywhere. It's frustrating him because he couldn't fish. Met a lot of good people over here. Obviously, I'm going to go fishing with Gasper, that I'm quite looking forward to, because I think there's a few things to learn from him. Plus, we're fishing a lake that probably not many English have ever fished, if any. So the long and short of it is, I've caught one fish and a load of chub on this trip, on the 4-week trip. To be fair, like, you know, the fishing's about 50% of the trip. I'm half tempted to go back to Bled after we fish with Gasper. I think we can do like 5 days in Croatia with Gasper, and we've probably got a few days left, so I'd love to get back there. I've just fell in love with the place. The place is amazing. Like I said, we had some good days out. We went, you know, waterfalls and gorges and all sorts of stuff without even doing any fishing. It's still, considering it's just a lake with a load of restaurants and bars and stuff around it, there's a lot to do. We went tobogganing down one of the ski slopes. Obviously, it's a ski resort in the winter. But yeah, I'm excited to do these trips next year and hopefully get a few more people to see it. Well, us carpers can still fish it. Cause I think it'd be pretty amazing. I think you'd love it with your missus. I know you have quite a lot of holidays, don't you? I do think you should put that on your list. You only need two scopes in a suitcase, and you can get bits over there anyway. But it's just an amazing place to visit. Just while we're talking about VIP carp holidays, we've got the two lakes, St. Armand, which is fantastic. We've had some Carpcast listeners write reviews for us and do little audio blogs on the Steve Briggs show, was it? Which was
46,
yes, well remembered. If you want to go and check that out, there are taking bookings for next year on there. You get a farmhouse and your own private 4.5 acre lakes, absolutely stuffed full of fish. You're going to catch a lot of fish, 10-20 fish a day, up to £50, and great fun. There's a farmhouse that sleeps 10 people, there's games rooms, there's all sorts in there. And we're taking bookings for next year. There is a few weeks left this year as well. VIPcarpholidays.com is where you can go to and have a look at the diary and see what's available. Obviously, because it's very family orientated, with the house and stuff, the holiday weeks or school holiday weeks go very soon. One of the other venues we're booking for is Jim Lightfoot's River Lot, and he's actually had a cancellation come up this year for a half term week, which is really rare on his place for them. On the River Lot, you get your own private 80 metres of bank to fish the river. Jim will help you out with all the tactics and stuff that you need. There's all sorts of species in there, big catfish. I've been catching a few big catfish recently, carp to £50. And he's just had a cancellation for October half term week, 22nd to the 28th. Excellent fishing. It's in the school holiday. It's a 7-bedroom villa with its own swimming pool, all the tackle at the villa if you want to fly over there. It's a grand a week, and a £200 deposit secures it. VIPcarpholidays.com if you are interested, or get in touch with me on there. And hopefully we'll be doing Slovenia trips next year as well. Just something, a bit of a sad story we can touch on before we go, Mark, and that's Chile. Have you seen his post?
I have, very sad, but it did bring a lot of people out. There's a lot of support for Chile, and we've got to have our support as well. You know, we're rooting for you, and you're a lovely bloke, big man, a fighter.
Yeah, but everybody knows, it's been quite well documented in the fishing press about Chile's wife's battle with cancer for many, many, many years. And, you know, he's been a carer for her, and, it's very heartwarming, the sort of closeness that they've obviously had during that period. And he's been diagnosed with a brain tumour, which seemed like an absolute kick in the balls to be, you know, putting up with a terminal illness anyway, and then getting one yourself. It seems horrible, and as you said, Chile's a big strong man, and we send him all the best wishes in the world. It's quite scary when you're reading messages from somebody that's, you know, basically said, I've got this much longer to live, and you know, that's the end of it. It's horrible. We don't like to think about death, do we? And you know, knowing you're going to die, well, we all know we're going to die, don't we, but knowing that it's coming sooner than maybe it should do, can't be nice to live with. It can't. So yeah, lots of best wishes to Chile. Yeah, we hope you catch some more kippers. That's put a smile on your face. That's it from us. No guests this week apart from obviously David and Rob Hales, just touching on the news stuff. Hopefully back with some stories of fish. Hopefully we'll be able to catch more than one fish in Croatia.
Yeah, and I'll hopefully be the time we record again, I'll have got me backside down the A1, A14 back down to Monks, and have some tales of carp and kelp.
Yes, yeah, hopefully you'll get a couple of kippers on there before the end of the season.
Oh, more than a couple.
Yes, cool. Alright, well, we will see you soon. Hopefully, now the Skype from an apartment in Croatia is working, and hopefully we'll be able to get another podcast out before I come home. With a bit of luck, hopefully, if there's any news, any big kippers, that's what we want.
Yes, good news.
Yes, definitely. Cool. Right, we're out of here. Catch you later.
Website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.